and welcome everybody to the Be Happy podcast. This is Charles Davis here. This week I have a special guest, a friend of a friend, and we just briefly met just a few minutes ago before the podcast interview started here. His name is Sir Blake Sinclair. But before I introduce Sir Blake, if you could please, if you're listening to the podcast first time and you've been here many times, you haven't subscribed already, if you could go down to the bottom and subscribe, I'd really appreciate it. The podcast, I'd really appreciate it. It helps more people know what's going on. It raises us up in rankings and algorithms and things like that so that more people can find the podcast and more people, obviously, can be happy. So this week, special guest, Sir Blake Sinclair. And Sir Blake is the CEO of Ultima Unlimited Incorporated. He is a writer, an author of three books on of spirituality and health. He is also a licensed occupational therapist, a certified health coach, PEMF cloud certified, a Reiki practitioner, internationally recognized blogger, is also a Grand Knight Commander of the Equestrian Order of Michael Archangel, as well as the Goodwill Ambassador for the House of Ghassan. Is that Ghassan or Ghassan?
I think Ghassan.
Ghassan. The House of Ghassan. Welcome, Sir Blake. Such a pleasure to have you on the Be Happy podcast. What did I miss?
Oh, no, you have it. That's good enough. good to meet you, and thanks for inviting me to your show.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on and get to know more about you from what I've read from your rather extensive biography that was online. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, where did you come from? And I know about all these things, but, you know, where do you come from? What's your background? What makes you this amazing person that I see listed here?
So where did I come from? Or where was I born? I was born in San Francisco, Bay Area. Actually, San Francisco in Chinatown specifically. And I grew up in the 60s there. And I grew up at a time where there were a lot of amazing martial art masters there. Mm. And Bruce Lee was born in the same hospital I was born in San Francisco. He actually lived right next to the hospital at that time. His parents were like, his father was a performer, a Chinese opera singer. And at the time, his mother was pregnant and they gave birth to him there. And I lived there about a block away from there. But growing up in San Francisco, Chinatown, it was a kind of difficult back then. It was kind of rough. And I don't know if you remember back in the old days, there were a lot of gang wars, you know, the Hua Qing, Zhou Fong gangs. And it was kind of a stressful environment to grow up. And growing up in Chinatown is kind of difficult too, because we would have to go to regular school and then we would have to go to Chinese school for a few more hours. And then, of course, my mom wanted me to go to martial arts school and then music school. So I had a very, very busy schedule, which is in some ways is good. It keeps me busy and focused. But unfortunately, I had really very strict parents. My father was a sergeant in the military. So he was a kind of a tough guy. In fact, he was so tough, the gangsters were afraid of him. He used to chase them around. So, but it gives you an idea of him. He was very volatile. So I think, as I recall, my early childhood, it was very peaceful and happy. And then later on, when I was about 3 to 4 years old, it became very turbulent. My father and mother, they had a lot of arguments, and it created a very toxic and negative environment. And so that was not good for my psyche. And then as I grew older, went to school, I studied martial art, I studied different things. And, you know, back then, people were not really into psychology, and they were not so aware of the power of the word. Well, what people say to you. And I remember being put down a lot by teachers even. So they would ask me, how stupid are you? Or why are you so stupid? And these things that get into your mind. And growing up with my parents the way they were, and they're just not very supportive. Back then, you know, you just have to listen, you have to obey, and otherwise you get a good spanking, you know. And there was not much hug back then. And but I don't blame them. But then growing up in an environment where there was a lot of discrimination was very difficult too. Not only, you know, from other people, but even from within my own group of Chinese people, Chinese Americans. Because you're born here, they consider you like a banana. you know, you may look yellow outside, but you're white inside. So I was too like a Asian for some people, and some people just, I didn't fit in. So it was very difficult, and carrying all that in my psyche, and of course that goes into your body, into your organs and all that, it affected me. So I was a very ill child, and I was very depressed, had a low self-esteem. I couldn't even talk on the phone. I was so shy. It was a very difficult time. I was always internally preoccupied. I saw no hope in the world. So that was kind of the picture of my life from probably maybe 3-4 years old all the way to my early adulthood, to something in the 20s probably. Wow. And so, yeah, it was tough. That's like, gives you an idea of my background and where I came from. So so how did I become the person I am today? Well, at one point, because of all these things happening, my father was having like issues in the marriage and relationship. They were fighting constantly, you know, waking up in the middle of the night and hearing my father yell. It just traumatized me. And at one point, I just wanted to give up. Eventually, I had friends and church and so forth. I think that was nice to have that support. I think if it wasn't for that, I don't know where I'd be. But still, I somehow felt isolated. I felt lonely because I didn't fit in right. I didn't fit into the American culture. And then for the Chinese culture, I was too Americanized. So either I'm too American or too Chinese. I just didn't fit in. And so at one point, I just had a meltdown, and I really didn't want to live anymore. I tried to reach out to people that I knew to get some support. And they were busy, unfortunately, the timing of it. You know, they were studying, doing their finals. And, you know, I can't blame people for that. So I just kind of turned inwards. And at one point, I was by myself with my brother in the house, my late brother. And I was just thinking about it. I said, you know what? I don't want to go on anymore. What's the use of living when you're told that you can't do anything? You're good for nothing. You're stupid. You have all these things in your mind. And why live? You know, and I think I wrote a letter, or actually I drew some artwork. People write a suicide letter, but I did a suicide animation. And then my father and sister saw that. And so they rushed over, because at the time I lived in the Sunset in San Francisco, and my parents lived in Chinatown. So they found that letter and they came over. And my dad couldn't deal with it because he's just a Mr. Macho Man. He couldn't deal with emotion. So he stayed downstairs with my brother. My sister and my mom came to me to support me. And, you know, we're just all crying. It was a very difficult time. And just thinking about that brings tears to my eyes. And it took me many years to get over that. But I felt like I wasn't loved by anybody, that no one listened to me. No one heard me, my heart, my soul, my cries. And finally, you know, I got through to my mom somehow. She's a tough lady, but she cried. Mm. And my sister was there. And at that moment, and it gave me hope. It gave me a glimmer of hope. And I wrote about the story in detail in my first book, Dare to Imagine. And it gave me the strength to kind of want to hang in there. So I decided at that moment that, you know what, I'm going to try my best to make it through life. I don't want to continue this way. I don't want to continue to feel this way. I don't want to continue to think the way I was thinking. I don't want to be depressed anymore. Something's got to change. So I spent my life on this quest to end my suffering. So I did everything. I went to see the doctor on holistic healing, and a study about nutrition and health and hypnosis, everything. You know, and I really improved a lot, you know, 180 degrees. But still, there's some lingering things within me that kind of held me from growing, held me from loving myself. And I still had anger towards my parents for a long, long time. But through a persistence and determination, I kept on working at things. You know, I kept on working on that subconscious realm through hypnosis, and to work with a therapist to talk through all these things, to gain insight, and to look at the situation more objectively, and to realize that, you know, my parents weren't these super gods, that they were human. And, yeah, you know, they did the best they could. And I couldn't carry that anger for them anymore. You know, I just had to release that and forgive them. So when I learned to forgive them, it released that energetic hold on me. But I think ultimately it was that path of the spiritual path that set me free. So I began to go on that and many years searching what is the meaning of life. And I even before I went on my spiritual path, I wanted to like work hard to prove it to people that people like us, like me, you know, I think in school we were called like school dummies, and that, you know, we were people too. We mattered, you know, not just the smart people. So I decided I was going to work really hard, get good grades, and be successful, pursue the American dream. You know, so eventually I got a good job and made good money and bought all the material things I wanted. And I got that, but I wasn't happy inside. You know, outside I had friends and, you know, they would like me because of these things. But inside I said, who really loves my soul? Will these people be here still if I didn't have anything? And so that pushed me to kind of go further for that spiritual search for meaning in life. And I spent many years doing that. And I ended up studying with different gurus and masters. And ultimately, I found one guru. I found Mount Shasta. And he was a best-selling author. He's a mystic. I studied with him. And he helped me to access and discover that divinity within. To find the ultimate guru is not outside of us. It's inside of us. And through that process, discovering that inner guru, you know, that divinity and tuning into that and listening to that, then I begin to have the divine guidance guiding me to the path that set me free. And that took many years to get to that point. So that was another book that I wrote, Beyond Imagination. And it talks about that spiritual journey, the birth of my mysticism. So I went through all these different growth. And I think through all that, it set me free to be the person that I am today. And people look at me now and say, oh, you're successful or whatever. They look at me and say, you've done a lot of stuff. To me, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that I found my way home. It doesn't matter how many cars I have, you know, how much, if I'm wearing designer stuff or not. Those are not important things. But the fact that I was able to find the secrets of life, the mysteries of life, that inner guru, the divine presence, and ultimately found my way to God and the universe and the cosmos, and to find my true nature, and then found peace. And so through that process, it gave birth to these three books that I've written throughout the years. So I think the last one was written in 2020. And it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah, it sounds like it. In some ways, it mirrors my life. I'm sitting here thinking, have you read my story or something? You know, not that I'm Asian at all, obviously. I'm very, very, very homogenous white. But, you know, my dad was in the Army. He was in the Second World War before I met him, right? And so he was like that. When you're talking about your dad, I totally get what you're meaning, right? And, you know, I went through some similar things with my parents. I grew up feeling like I was nothing. From school, you know, they remember them saying, you'll never amount to anything. You're the worst kid in the school. You know, those types of things. And, you know, went through a period of time where I didn't want to live anymore, you know, and it's pretty desperate times when you're going through that. Cause it's like, why am I here? What's the reason? So you found your guru in Mount Shasta after searching and meeting a lot of different gurus, but this person for some reason really changed things. What happened there?
Well, I mean, I've been on a spiritual path for a while. I studied with different people, and I found that many people are just knowledgeable, and I feel like they're living the world of the ego. And with this guru, he seemed to have this certain divine presence. And as a very simple guy and very sincere. And he wrote about these sacred teachings. They call them the I Am teachings, you know. And I gravitated to that. When I saw his picture for the first time, you know, I began to tune into my inner presence, the divine presence. And I knew right away that after seeing his picture, I had to meet him. So when you get to that spiritual path, you listen to the heart. And the universe, the cosmos, is anchored within your heart. And when you start listening to that, it guides you to who you need to meet, where you need to be, what you need to do. So I started to do that. But prior to meeting him, I was meditating a lot. I began connecting to the kind of the ascended master realm, connecting to the Kuan Yin. But somehow I lost contact with her. And then I went to the mountain, Mount Shasta, one of the most sacred and spiritual, metaphysical, paranormal places in the world. And some people call it the root chakra. Some people call it the heart chakra. And other people say that the people from Tibet brought some artifacts over to Mount Shasta, anchored the energy from Tibet to Mount Shasta. So it became kind of the crown chakra of the planet too. So I went there to study some Reiki healing with a kind of shaman, a Canadian shaman. His name was Joe Eagle. And he wielded a kind of amazing, extraordinary crystal wand. They call it the Vogel crystal. I don't know if you heard about it, but people use it for shamanism. And it's huge. I mean, the one he had was probably maybe 5 pounds or more. Wow. And it was probably over $10,000. And it was developed by one of these scientists, Marcel Vogel, who probably had like 50 patents. And I believe he worked for IBM. He was a Catholic and also a mystic. And he made this thing to amplify energy. So as a healer that does Reiki, you put your intention and energy into it. It amplifies it, like turbocharge it. So I end up later on buying a smaller one, just a fraction of that size, but it's pretty amazing stuff. But anyways, he worked on me at Mount Shasta in that sacred area at the Panther's Meadow on top of the mountain there. And we did energy healing, and he worked on my different chakras. And I was still kind of new to this idea of chakras. And chakras are energy vortexes. You know, we have like some major ones, but there's up to like 15 or more chakras, you know, in our body and outside of our body. And the vortexes that plexuses of energy that innervate the different organs and the tissues in their surrounding area. So if they're working in harmony, then you're working in smoothly in your life. For example, if you have a chakra blockages in your throat, you might have trouble expressing yourself, or you might have trouble speaking your truth. So they all have some kind of symbolic significance. Anyways, he was working on me and I had my eyes closed, and he used this humongous Vogel crystal wand on me. And each area he would go to, I would see amazing, extraordinary light, really bright. I mean, super bright. Wow. I've never seen it so bright before. But when you're in the presence of this kind of crystal and a healer, amazing things happen. So he began to open all those chakras. And after we were done, I got up and I looked at the sun. And all of a sudden, there was this violet ray. It just came forth. It was a beautiful thing. And he didn't see it, but I saw it. It was such a beautiful sight. And after that event, I began connecting back to Kuan Yin. She's the goddess of mercy. In Asia. And then somehow my connection with this guy, Joe Eagle, we became friends and connected on Facebook. And that's when I saw on this list, this guy, Peter Mount Shasta, and the energy was so strong. And my heart knew, I said, you need to contact this guy. And so I listened to that. So I just sent him a message, or I can't remember if it was a messenger or email, but he said, okay, you know, come on over. So it was a kind of interesting story about that too. He lives about 4 hours from where I live. So he lives at Mount Shasta. And so I listened to that divine presence. They call it the I Am presence. Some people call it the Holy Spirit. Some people call it the Atman. But the inner compass, that's what it is, the divine inner compass. So I listened to that. So I drove to go there. And, you know, when you're driving that long distance, you want to take a break. And I was tired and I needed to go to the restroom. There was a prompting inside said, don't stop. You have to keep going. And I said, you know, you got to be kidding. I got to go. Nature's calling. And they said, no, put it on hold. Keep going. So I just listened and I kept on going and went all the way there to Mount Shasta. And we met at Lily's Cafe. And just as I got there, he was getting up to leave. So if I didn't listen to that divine presence, I would have missed it. And that would have changed my life completely. One of these mystics said, it's very rare to find people nowadays. Most people could care less about connecting to the angelic realm. They're too busy, want to make money and all that. But he dedicated his whole life to doing this. And he's actually the apprentice to Saint Germain, who's like this ascended being that's influenced humanity to rise in consciousness. And he's worked with many ascended beings. So Kuan Yin is one of them that, you know, he's worked with. So we began talking in at the restaurant and had a great time. So I never think about these things. I just do what I'm told to do and show up and be there. And after we had our nice breakfast, he invited me to his place. And 1 week prior to going there, I had this kind of a weird obsession with turbans. And I kept on looking at Amazon, looking, wanted to buy a turban. And then my wife said, "Are you crazy? You're not even Indian. Why do you want to buy a turban? You're not Sikh." I said, "Yeah, but I don't know why. I'm fascinated with it." So I began walking around his house. And I looked at this picture, and there was this guy with a turban. I said, "Who's this guy?" And he goes, "Oh, this is the Maha Chohan. He's an ascended master." And so I said, "Oh, wow, that's really fascinating." I didn't make that connection yet. And we were just talking, looking around. I think he had a statue of Kuan Yin there. I said, "Oh, my God, you know, he connected to her as well." And as I just kept on talking, all of a sudden, he had a message, a download. And he said, "You know, you have to go to Mount Shasta." I said, "Mount Shasta, why?" He says, "Oh, the Maha Chohan is waiting for you." I said, "What? But this guy that I just saw in the picture, he wants to meet with me? I don't even know who he is." And then we just started talking again. 5 minutes later, he said the same thing. He says, "You know, he's waiting for you now. Go there." I said, "Go there? Where? I don't know where to go." So he said, "Just go there." And so I left this house, and I respected him because he's an amazing guru and master. So I said, "Okay, he's got this vision and download, and I need to listen to it, especially the asking to meet with me." So I went there. I began driving up the mountain, and it was a really dark day. It was kind of like all cloudy and dark, and it was snowing. There was snow on the road, so I was going very slowly. Got to the point where I reached, I think, Bunny Flat, and there's a few people there walking around, snow all around. And I said, I have no idea where to go. And I looked around, and I saw this huge, like, giant footprint. And I don't know, was it a Bigfoot or something, I don't know, a bear or something, because they have black bears there. But they are known to have Bigfoot sightings in the area as well. It's a paranormal mountain. So I just listened to the inner guidance, and it brought me to an area, and I began to meditate. And all of a sudden, I had this high frequency from my right ear, very high. And then I began to see these ascended beings. And it was Kuan Yin, you know, Saint Germain, the Maha Chohan, Jesus. They were just there. They didn't say anything. And all of a sudden, they were doing some kind of attunement to me, sending some kind of energy to me, activating me. And it lasted for a while. And when it was done, you know, they left. And all of a sudden, that frequency dissipated and it left. And I looked up, and suddenly I looked at the sky. And I kid you not, the whole sky just became clear. It was blue sky. And it was completely dark before that. You can't even see the sky. Oh, it was dark, so dark that people were leaving. So I was the last person left. So that was the birth of my mystical experience. And I connected with these masters, and they've been with me ever since. And through the years, through my meditation, through my spirituality, more and more spiritual masters, these ascended masters are coming to me to guide me in the path. So, you know, you get these divine beings guiding you, and it's been an amazing journey. So as long as I listen to them, I stay in the right path, you know, I'm okay.
So here's the synergy. I know who Peter Mount Shasta is.
Oh.
And because his guru was Neem Karoli Baba.
Yes.
I know Neem Karoli Baba very well, because when I went to India, I went to 7 of his temples while I was in India. And it was Neem Karoli Baba was the reason that I went to India, which is why I know about Peter Mount Shasta. I also know about the I Am teachings and the books and the series of books and Saint Germain. So it's very synergistic that we ended up here together without knowing that about each other, you know? So
how it works.
So yeah, there's a reason. There's always a reason, right? And so it comes together like that. Yeah. Yeah. So fantastic. So you got this amazing download. And since then, you've had more ascended masters come to you. What then? Like what you know, like you've written books and you've done all these amazing things. Like what started to come together for you then when your spiritual life started to, it's like that was the opening of your spiritual life, like a real opening to your spiritual life. And then it sounds like a lot of stuff began to come together.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting. The books that I write, I don't just sit down and write a book. In fact, I started to write a book. I wanted to write a novel. And I started to get these downloads. And I never had that experience before. Downloads of wisdom. And I would have to write them down. If I don't write them down, the ideas, the principles, they will haunt me over and over again until I write down. Once I write down and it releases me, then another download will come. And that's what happened. I was getting these downloads of principles of spirituality. I would download it, what was downloaded from the universe, and then I started to write it and then incorporate it into my life. And then it began to evolve me in my spirituality. So after the download is done, and when I'm supposed to finish writing, it just stops. Just like that attunement at Mount Shasta. Once the transmission they sent to me was done, it just stopped. And then suddenly the sky cleared up. And I've had these mystical experiences before when I did some very spiritual and sacred things. You know, the bad weather storm just suddenly just clears up like that. It's like a positive omen. So I always just sit and listen and wait to what's next. So after I finished my first book, I said, okay, I'm done. In Dare to Imagine, I did my good deed for the planet. So I just started living my life. And all of a sudden, it starts coming to me again. And this time, the universe, the ascended beings, they wanted me to share the information about the spiritual path, the path to enlightenment, you know. And so I began to write. And so that was done. And then prior to the health crisis, you know, that we had, I was getting downloads to write this book. And it was a different kind of book this time. It was a book about health and wellness. And I was guided to study on this stuff and to go on a deep dive on health and wellness. And so I just listen and I start writing. So in retrospect, I believe that the universe, you know, and all these cosmic and intergalactic beings I'll talk about later on, and ascended masters, they were guiding me to write these books to basically empower humanity, to wake up, to be empowered to navigate through the crisis, the health crisis, more gracefully. And the more people embrace the information, the easier they were able to navigate through it. And I try to be cryptic and, you know, try to put information in a way that's easy to understand. But the information is still relevant to this very day, that if you incorporate it. And too many people in the past live in a life where they just kind of listen blindly to what they're told to do. And consequently, people suffered, you know. So part of my reason for coming to this planet, you know, after I went all this spiritual awakening, is to help end the suffering. In fact, I had a vision of myself coming to the planet. I was like incarnating to this planet with a group of people. It wasn't a whole lot, but it was a group of us coming. And our purpose was to help end the suffering of people. So through the teachings, through the writings, through the lectures and so forth, give information to help people, to empower them to wake up and to get the tools to help their mind, help their emotions, help the physical body, the spiritual body, to empower them to have more mastery and to freedom, and to help them help the planet raise the consciousness. So now I'm kind of working behind the scenes, working on planetary consciousness through the meditation process. So I just do whatever I'm called to do. Just like this last year, I was called to go to Slovakia to give a lecture, do some teachings. So I'll probably go in there in June to do some teaching. And so whenever there's a prompting within me to do something, I just go and do it. So I just open my heart to spirit, to God, to masters, and whatever it needs to be done is done. Now, the last one that they want me to do now, it's like part of my life. You know, I have this divine, mystical part of my life. I have a paranormal part of my life. And I guess I have this intergalactic part of my life as well. I haven't talked much about it. I began talking about it last year. And the fact that my father was part of that UFO history, the birth of Roswell, he was there. My father was in the military and he did top secret stuff at White Sands, New Mexico. So I started to talk about that. a lot of people got really excited about that because he basically validated the truth that something basically crash landed near Roswell, and they retrieved the wreck at his place at the White Sands. He was a photographer for that. So he developed the pictures. And although he told me that he didn't look at it, later on, I did more research with family members and friends and so forth. And we found out that he actually looked at the pictures, and he was much more involved than we realized. And that kind of triggered me in my own search for myself, because I did my spiritual search. But then there was this whole intergalactic connection that I had. And I began to search for that. And I have some memories of things like that I did with hypnosis about early childhood contact with ET beings when I was a kid. I was lost in a farm for about an hour. And so I was able to retrieve that memory, do hypnosis. But then I was on a show, Coast to Coast show, about this topic. And before I did it, I decided to search deeper. So I went to a famous UFO expert, Misha Johnson, and did a deeper hypnosis. And I was amazed that a lot of the stuff I had contact when I was a young kid, I had forgotten about it completely. And through that hypnotic regression experience, I retrieved information about other encounters as well. So apparently I had all these intergalactic experiences, and they tie into the spirituality too. And so there's this kind of divine plan, you know, for this planet, for the universe and so forth. So I'm kind of debating whether I should go forth with this next book, you know, about the Roswell incident, not just about that, but talk about the bigger implications. And so it ties into, again, the awakening of human consciousness, increasing the frequency in the planet and empowering people. So each day, each month, and more my life mission kind of is shown to me what I need to do. So otherwise, my regular thing, I have a business I run. I am also a therapist, a holistic practitioner. So I find that as you meditate, as you reach higher consciousness, you know, you activate that light within you. So wherever you go, you know, you bring light and love to all those that you're with. And I share the healing, my holistic philosophy, and to empower people. And those who are open to it, I share it. And I have so many tools that it's just, for me, it's so exciting to share it. And people hungry, I give it to them. Otherwise, I just do my usual stuff. But it's been an amazing journey, and it keeps on getting more and more interesting.
So if somebody wants to embark on a more of a spiritual, mystical type of a life, where do they begin?
Well, to make it easier for you, because there's a lot of people, they can get in the wrong path. It's so easy to do that. And everybody wants to activate their third eye. They want to get this ayahuasca, and they don't do the groundwork. And so I think part of the reason I wrote this book is to kind of guide people. You know, I have all the principles laid out for you, like what to do. You know, it's like step one, step two, all these different principles. As you incorporate it, you automatically raise your frequency and consciousness. So it shows like how I was just a toxic and angry child, and it evolved into this happy person. So if you follow these principles, like what principle is love, learning about love and what is love. And it's not like falling in love. It's like loving someone unconditionally. And we were created out of love. You know, love is the highest frequency in the universe. So we can learn to gravitate and to let that light and that love fill us, we live a happier life. So those are some of the foundation things, and working on the being grateful. You know, a lot of people say, what's in it for me? You know, and you got to be grateful for what you have. Sometimes we don't realize how our life is so great until we go to another country and we see how people are suffering there. So things are perspective. People are suffering there. So things are perspective. But you're struggling with work, but you have a job. And you have a house, you know. There's always something to be grateful for, you know, for your breath. And so when you learn the principles, the basic foundation, you know, integrity and meditation and prayer, all those things, they start building you up. And then when you have a nice foundation, you did the inner work to work on all those subconscious things, and you clean it up. Then when you go on the spiritual path deeper, and it gets you're more accelerated and you don't get lost. I see so many spiritual leaders, so many gurus, and they're living the world of the ego. And they didn't do the inner work. They just learned all the knowledge. A lot of people like that. You know, a lot of people on TV, very charismatic, got millions of followers. They're very good on the camera and they make a lot of money, but they have no substance. They speak like an angel. They memorize things and regurgitate it. And they regurgitate in a way that's marketable. And people like that. They say enough in a few minutes. People love it. A lot of likes and a lot of people buy the books or whatever. But, you know, a lot of these people, you know, I find that they're not really spiritual. They're like, it's just a performance, like a greatest showman on earth. They're just performing. And then when you see the real life, they don't really practice what they preach. And I think there's a disconnect with a lot of these people, you know, a lot of these gurus, a lot of these masters high up. And they're very good. And but yet, when you get down to it and see how they deal with people, how do they deal with themselves? How do they deal with nature? How do they deal with animals? Animals, they know. They feel that energy within you. If you're with love and with light, they gravitate to you. And so, I mean, and you have to think beyond yourself. And the ego is the biggest problem for so many people. So learning how to, we need it to survive, to be aware, but we need to also integrate it. And we have to live beyond ourselves. And when we learn how to live beyond ourselves, to serve, then that's when we begin to really live. You know, be service to God, be service to humanity, empower people. It's not about just making money. We all need to make money to survive. But there's a point that you don't want to manipulate people with your skills, you know, all these marketing schemes so that you can make money out of millions of people. And then you say, oh, I'm successful. But, you know, that it may be successful in this worldly realm, this matrix, you know, but that's not real happiness. That's not real success. You know, and real success, you know, you have to embrace something that's more internal. You have to embrace the reason why you came here. And it just can't just be just one dimension, one-sided. It has to be more holistic. And you have to leave behind some kind of legacy and make a difference in someone's life, you know, and grow. It's like as you're maturing, I see it like a lotus. It's blooming to unfold that soul coming forth. And when you do that, this beautiful soul comes out. So at the end, you merge and you set yourself free to the universe, to the cosmos. And so that you can exist beyond this physical reality and become like one of the ascended masters.
Yeah. So there was a lot there. Kind of what I heard you say is watch out for the shiny object, right? Because that's what we're attracted to, is that shiny object. But what we really need to do is make sure that the shiny object is a real object and is coming from the right place. That's and meaning these gurus, because I've seen them all too.
We've
all seen them. And, you know, in the past, we've seen some of the leaders, I won't call them gurus, but some of the leaders of some of the evangelical Christian movements who, you know, looked like they were doing it all, and then next thing had some terrible falls, right? Because their life wasn't congruent with what they were talking about. And that happens. It is not exclusive to evangelical Christian leaders. It can happen in every branch of self-improvement, spirituality, whatever you want to call it. You got to be careful. You got to use some discernment when you're, you know, not to say like stay away from everybody because there's some good people out there, but you need to use some discernment when you're going into it. And then the second thing I heard you say, and I love this, is go out and help other people, right? Go out and work with other people. Go and you know, do something for somebody else. Leave a lasting legacy. Hinduism, of course, they call that seva.
Mm-hmm. Seva. Yeah.
Service, right? Service. Yeah. And so, you know, if somebody's hurting, it's hard for them to go out and be of service because they're like, I need, how can I, you know, but what can they do? Like, what can they start to do? Because once you got, you know, the thing I found about service is once you're serving people, you're not looking at yourself anymore. You're looking out.
That's right.
You're able now to kind of channel that love that is, like you said, the highest vibration of the universe. So how is a person, how can a person like shake themselves out of that and start to serve?
You know, sometimes it's difficult for some people because of their circumstance, but we all can do some kind of seva. You know, even, you know, if you're so busy and all that, but just like when I'm driving, if I see something, situation happen, I can't do anything about it, I do pray. I invoke the presence of like protection of Archangel Michael to protect them, or that they're healing. And I will focus on their healing. If I see someone in an accident, I say, I surround light, you know, maybe the violet ray around them to protect them, and to accelerate healing of the brain to minimize the damage and the inflammation. So I do that. Or I see an animal that got killed, and I'll pray for that animal's soul. I'll say, may this animal, this bird, reincarnate into the next life to a higher consciousness being, so they won't be in this situation again. Simple things like that. You know, even spending time with a family member or a friend, those are all seven. Those are all ways of helping. I mean, or if you have more time, you can go to some place to do some serving of meals for the needy people. There's so many different ways of doing it. Just kind of look into your life and what time of, you know, do you have, how available you are. Just be creative in doing something. Even meditating, even praying for the planet, those are seva. So just find where the need is. The important thing is just kind of learn how to still the mind. So when you still the mind, you go within and then you get away from all the clutter and all the junk of the negative thoughts and emotions and get pure consciousness. The more you do that practice, the more you can feel that kind of gentle prompting, that gentle nudge inside. Otherwise, you just hear noise, you know, or you hear all the things you learned when you were a kid from 0 to 7 years old. All the conditionings and all that. So you want to get all that out of there and listen to pure consciousness and listen to that cosmic presence coming from your heart, guiding you. Say, how may I be of service? And the universe will guide you to what you need to do. You just have to listen. And it's hard in the beginning, but the more you listen to it, and the better it tells you how to get on your life's path and how to fulfill your dharma in life. A lot of times we want to listen to ourselves and say, I want to do this and this. I want to make this much money. I want to own these certain things because I want to be successful. You know, it's not all about that. And some people who have the most material things are the people who are the saddest. They may seem happy outside, but inside they're sad. There's a lot of billionaires, millionaires. But, you know, to me, when I look at them, I see spiritual poverty. You know, it's better to be just making average money and being rich spiritually. Because if you're really rich spiritually, you live a spiritual life in a kind of a life of gratitude and love, you know, you draw energy to you to do the things you need to do. So if you need to do some kind of spiritual business, well, the universe supports people whose energy is vibrating with altruism, people who want to help people. And the universe gives them that support, you know, and through spiritual practice, you can enhance your manifestation ability.
And that's really where success is, isn't it? Right? You're more rounded. I mean, you can be financially successful, mm-hmm. and yet still be spiritual in your life.
That's right.
And what I'm hearing is a lot of what you said from your own personal life and what you're recommending to other people is meditation. Can you just talk a little bit about meditation?
Yeah, meditation. A lot of people are afraid of that word. It's, oh, I can't meditate. And the thing is, you can. Me, I'm a person who was very distracted when I was young. You tell me something and I get distracted. I daydream a lot. So meditation for me was extremely hard. You know, I probably had ADD. I would just meditate for 1 minute and then fall asleep. And so, but I just kept at it. So maybe in the beginning, 1 minute, maybe 5 minutes. So sometimes in the beginning, we need some kind of guided music or a voice. In the beginning, it's okay in the beginning. But eventually, as you mature, you don't need that stuff. You know, you need to just focus on your breath. Where your breath goes is where your consciousness goes, you know, and vice versa. So focusing on the breathing, just simple breathing, you know, and then close your eyes and just kind of look within on your breath and just observe the breath. And then as your brain, your attention wanders, you imagine like a cloud, you know, and just observe that cloud. Don't get distracted. Just say, okay, I see the cloud, but redirect your attention back to your breath. And through that practice, you begin to focus inward more and more. And that's kind of like the basic part of the Vipassana meditation, which is a meditation that the Buddha attained enlightenment. There's so many different ones, but someone who's never done it before, who gets distractible, maybe try the meditation from Wayne Dyer. He has a CD or download. You can listen to that. I think in the background, they put the sound of God's name in the background, and that helps you too to meditate. But those are the beginning phase. You start that at the beginning, and eventually just work on your breath work. You can do chanting. But in my books, I tell you how to do the different kinds, the real simple ones. So there's many ways of doing it, but just choose one that resonates with you and just focus on it and just keep on doing it on a regular basis. It doesn't matter if you consider yourself good or bad. The main thing is consistency. You're training your mind and that stillness. I mean, when people do meditation regularly for over a few months, they find that the DNA telomeres, those are the ends of the DNA, they live longer. And in China, there was a guy who lived 200-something years old, and his big secret was meditation. So meditation lengthens your life, helps you with stress, helps you with blood pressure, helps you with anxiety, depression. And the kind of meditation that I do is really intense. I do maybe hour and a half, and it helps you with higher consciousness, connecting to the ascended beings. But when you start off with, you're not going to be doing that. You're just going to be doing it to gain peace and relaxation and to have a better quality of life. And through that process, you will gain insight and you will learn things. You know, if you're a creative person, you become more creative. If you have trouble analyzing things, you may find the answer in meditation. So there's many reasons for doing it. So the main thing is just do it. All successful people that I know, they do some form of meditation. And if you want to live a good quality life, the art of living, I highly recommend meditation. So learn a form of meditation. And Vipassana is a good meditation to start with. And otherwise, I have simple, basic meditation methods in my book as well. And when it's out, just breathe. Close your eyes and breathe and focus within. That's it.
That's the simplest way to start. I agree. Just start by our breath. And the first gift that we get in life is the breath. And when our life is finished, we give it back.
That's right.
You know, so we get the gift, we get to keep it for a while, and then we give it back. So that's where we begin with. And that's the connection to our life. And that's the connection to us, to the continuum of life. Because when we give life, we give the breath back, now it's there for somebody else to pick up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And for our next life, it's there for our next life when we come back.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So I love how you're talking about the breath, and consistency is so important. The longer you do it, and then what happens after you do it, what I have found anyhow, and I'm not sure if you found this, but then life becomes a meditation. Like it's, as you're walking, as you go through life, it's like a meditation.
That's right. It should integrate into your life. So there's actually the fourth tradition Buddhist monks, they have a walking style of meditation. So as you bring it, incorporate in your life, you find more peace in whatever you do, more focus. Things have turbulence in your life, you just spend a few moments, just focus, relax. Even just being one with what you're doing, that's kind of a form of meditation. Just looking at the flower and enjoying the fragrance and look into the flower deeply. When you look deep enough, you see into eternity. So just being one with the present moment, that's a form of meditation.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing what happens, for sure. And so after meditation, then it's just a matter of listening to that still small voice. But the voice becomes louder, doesn't it?
I think if you stay focused and grounded, you'll keep on hearing it. But if you're too busy with life and doing too many things, then it's harder to hear it. So as you become just more still and simple in your life and not distracted, and just listen, it's always there, and it's louder when you're more focused and grounded.
And it doesn't always come in sound either. Like for me, it can be a sense in the stomach.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, it can be the sound. It can be
the stomach, your heart, but something, there's a nudge that just kind of shocks you, as a hey, to get your attention. You know, So sometimes, like, there's like a presence coming on and around me, some divine presence, something will activate my ear. So there's different ways of perceiving this prompting.
Yeah, yeah. And when you do, and you follow it, you're going to be exactly where you need to be.
And then it's really tricky because behind this divine presence, there's like a shadow presence too. And it's what leads you to the world of the ego, and it's more gratifying yourself. So you have to have discernment, you know, which path is the light and which path is leads you to the ego. And the more you listen to the cosmic divine presence, then the more it guides you to the right path. I mean, technically you can listen to your heart, and your heart is greedy and full of desires, and it'll lead you to the wrong path. So you have to choose wisely. Listen carefully.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's really a huge part of it. Listen carefully and listen with discernment. No matter where you go, if you're listening to another person, you're listening to yourself, have that discernment in there. And wait and be patient.
That's right.
You know, be patient.
And I would too add that I know a lot of the healing things people do, they talk to someone, talk therapy is great. They read a lot, and that's great too. But the subconsciousness is one of the hardest thing to work on, and a lot of people don't work on it. And that's why we see a lot of people with ego issues, because they didn't work on the subconsciousness. And subconsciousness is created during the first 7 years of life from our social media, from our families, from our teachers. And just like when I was young, they told me I was stupid. So that created this stupid mentality in me and this emotion. So everything I was doing was sabotaging myself until I go into the subconscious realm and do the hypnosis. Change that program with a qualified person, an ethical person, to put good suggestions to empower you. And then you start changing that pattern you have. So that's one form of working on subconsciousness. And the other way is, you know, affirmations, you know, right before you sleep. See yourself doing the things you want to do. So if you want to be happy, you know, right before you sleep, your mind is open to the subconscious realm. You say, I'm happy. You see yourself joyous. Don't say, I want to see myself happy, but see it as it's happening right now in the present tense. Smiling, laughing, having fun. Then your subconsciousness will take that information and put it into your body and your emotion, your mental body, and through the night and work through that. And then when you first wake up, do the same thing. And then it seals the deal so that it helps you to activate that into reality manifestation.
Yeah, the more you focus on things, the more your energy goes to that, and the more that's going to grow, because it's just all vibration, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're getting towards the end of the interview, and I told you before we started the interview that I was going to ask you this question, Sir Blake. If you could leave with the listeners just one little nugget of information for them that's going to make them just a little bit happier today, what would that be?
Well, I think one thing is just press on. No matter how tough life gets, so don't give up, because life is full of cycles. Life is not about winning or losing, but it's about opportunity to learn. Everything in life that happens is an opportunity to learn. Even the things that happened to me when I was young, all these trauma, it was opportunity for me to learn to forgive my parents, learn to love them, even though all these things happen. So it helps you grow. So if you can change your attitude and look at the world differently, be a little bit more grateful about things and see with different perspective, and just hang in there. You know, whatever you need support, get some help. And then realize that you can make it through. There's so many tools, and all my books have all these wonderful tools. You could take them, and then it'll be a shortcut for you to empower you to live a life better. So whatever you're going through, realize that you're not alone, and that there's tools out there, people like us who can help you to make it through. And just get the support, get the tools you need, hang in there, and you'll make it. You know, just believe in yourself and embrace, you know, the inner wisdom, and you'll make it.
Yeah, great advice. Beautiful advice. And I think we both have learned that in our lives, where it's just a matter of, it doesn't matter how bad it looks, it's going to be okay at some point. And I've told people myself, like, I've always feel that when you go down in life, you know, it's never a good place. It's never comfortable when you're down in life. But the funny thing is, it's just like you said, it's like a cycle, because you come back up in life again, and you come back up just as high as you went down, sometimes higher.
Yeah, just don't give up. I mean, like, you look at my life, I went to the bottom, the way to the bottom, and I still had moments in life where it's difficult, but you just have that faith and trust that there's something divine out there, and embrace that, and just meditate, pray, and just open your mind to changes, visualize it, and create that reality right before you sleep when you first wake up.
Yeah, fantastic. Beautiful advice. Thank you so much, Sir Blake. If somebody wants to get a hold of you or find out more about your work, what's the best way?
Well, they can go to sirblakesinclair.com, and it talks about my background, my books, my services, and so forth. And they could connect from the Facebook and all that, Sir Blake Sinclair on Facebook and Instagram. But the website is the best place. They can send me an email and reach out to me. But I wish all your listeners and viewers success and happiness in life. And it belongs to everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. But just open your heart and reach out and pray and ask for the universe support and be open to the process and hang in there. You'll get there. If I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah. Thank you, Sir Blake. So SirBlakeSinclair.com. I will make sure that information, as always, is in the description of the podcast. And if you're listening to this, again, just a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast so we can help more people listen to it, help more people be happy. Sir Blake, this was an amazing interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I'm so excited.
Pleasure. You're an amazing person. And so glad that we connect with Peter Malchasta as well.
Yeah, as well as our friend Alfredo. So,
yes.
It just kind of moves around there for sure. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.
And for sharing with us today. Charles Davis and Sir Blake Sinclair saying goodbye.